You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome to the Wolverine Confidential Podcast. I'm Andrew Kahn.
I'm Ryan Zook.
And I'm Aaron McMahon.
The Michigan football team is 10-0 after a dominant win over Nebraska. Can the Wolverines, with their run-heavy attack, finish the season strong? We answer that question and others, plus talk some hoops and hockey, coming up on Wolverine Confidential. Okay, guys, good to be with you here on Monday morning, November 14th. And it's same old for our Michigan football game recap podcast. The opponent changes, of course, every week, but the result seems to be pretty similar. This is a 34-3 drubbing of Nebraska at Michigan Stadium. And yeah, it just seems very similar to what we've seen from Michigan, especially recently. Just sort of this ho-hum dominance, not a ton of big plays offensively. You know, I think two sacks, no turnovers, no forced turnovers, but in the end, nearly three times as many yards. So yeah, what's your takeaway from Michigan's win over Nebraska?
Well, I'd like to get your guys' opinion on this because I've like gone back and forth in my head on Saturday's game. Like they put together to me a full game, four quarters, something we haven't seen in previous weeks, and they were getting off to slow starts, but Saturday just. I don't know. It didn't move the needle for me. Like there were a lot of mistakes on both sides of the ball. Not maybe both sides of the ball, the offensive side of the ball. Defense was fine. But you knew coming in Nebraska's offense was nothing great. Their starting quarterback wasn't there. So I kind of assumed Nebraska wouldn't put up many points. So the defense, I think, did its job. The offense did the job, but it just didn't like, I don't know. It seems like it's lacking something. And we get into this later on, but like, I don't know. It was a fine. They covered the spread. They did what they were expected to do. They won the football game. Maybe that was the goal at the end, you know, beginning of the game. But it just, I don't know, man. Like I have a hard time with, you know, translating this offensive performance into, you know, what we may see in a couple of weeks against Ohio State or the playoff or whatever the case may be. But it was fine. I mean, they won the game. They did on the ground like they have all season long. Same story. But I don't know, man. It's just the mistakes and some of the drop passes just, I don't know, were baffling to me.
Yeah, man, it's lacking something. It's lacking what it's lacked pretty much all year. It's the downfield passing attack. I mean, once again, JJ did not connect on any of his four deep ball attempts of 20 plus yards or more downfield. And that's been an area that Michigan struggled all season. And I don't think it's all on him. I'm obviously he can improve in that area, but Michigan's receivers have been really underwhelming this year. I mean, besides Ronnie Bell being that like possession type guy, there hasn't been anyone else that has really stretched the field. And when we'd heard all preseason about how many guys they have dominant or not dominant receivers, but like guys that really intriguing receivers with skill sets that really excited the coaches. None of that has translated to games really. So yeah, against Ohio State, is there handing off to Blake Corum 28 times gonna be enough? I don't know if they're gonna be able to run that many plays against Ohio State because I mean Ohio State's gonna hold the ball up more than Nebraska did because yeah, like Aaron said, two backup quarterbacks, not many playmakers on the outside or at running back. That was to be expected, but yeah, I think at this point. Everyone keeps saying the passing attack is coming downfield, and we have yet to see it, and it's heading into week 11.
Well, we just jumped right into it, didn't we, huh? Listeners out there, Michigan won this game 34-3. Don't listen to these two guys. Michigan is 10-0, 7-0 in the Big Ten. They've got the second highest scoring differential in the country. All right, this is a team that is elite in so many different ways. But, and I'll undercut my own argument there, we're nitpicking because this Michigan team has really big goals, and they're attainable. They're so close. And given the way, you know, last season ended, you can see why my co-hosts here are saying what they're saying. Now, to answer what Ryan just said about, you know, is Blake Corum running 28 times enough to beat Ohio State? I think maybe it is. Like, that's the blueprint to beat Ohio State. You're not going to air it out and beat them. Their secondary is good, and you know, it's in the trenches that they struggle, right? Like, why isn't this the blueprint to beat Ohio State?
I guess my gripe is because I'm just bored. Like, this Michigan team hasn't played anyone of like legit competition weeks, like Penn State, and you saw what they did against Penn State. So,
yep.
I guess I'm ready for like legit game here. Maybe Illinois is going to be that. I mean, they've shown that they can play defense, and they do have a legit running game. Although, we'll see if the running back plays on Saturday. But I'm just we're just waiting for this Ohio State game. Like, I'm assuming Michigan's going to beat Illinois on Saturday. They're going to be 11-0. But I just want some competition. It's been weeks. I think maybe Michigan's kind of getting eager too. You know, their schedule hasn't been great this year. The quality of the Big Ten hasn't been great. You know, I'm not going to go out on a limb by saying this, but I think the Big Ten last year was much more complete than the one this year. So Michigan's schedule just hasn't done itself any favors. Now, I know they have no control. They play who's on the schedule. They play who's in the conference, and that's how it goes. But they just haven't had a ton of competition, and that's maybe part of the gripe or some of the criticisms.
Yeah, it doesn't help that they've been facing these backed-up quarterbacks or banged-up teams too. And so it's hard to really get a good gauge on how this team would face against these top-tier teams in the country, like we've been comparing Michigan to all year, because they've been undefeated, because they made it to the playoff last year. But Andrew mentioned, is Blake Corum could be good enough to beat Ohio State. But again, the reason why I'm a little bit hesitant to say that is because I think Ohio State could put Michigan behind the eight ball, which Michigan hasn't really been much at all this year. Michigan scores on the first drive like every game. Like, what if they go 3-and-out to start the game against Ohio State, and CJ Stroud marches right down the field with their dominant passing attack and puts Michigan behind the eight ball? Or if they get behind two scores. I mean, they never got behind two scores last year, so they were able to kind of stay within striking distance and control the tempo, control the game, do what they wanted to do with Hassan Haskins. That might not happen in Columbus, and they might have to push the ball downfield. They might have to score quickly on a certain drive and not take 8 minutes to score and just continue to drain the defense. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be tough to see. I mean, when you look at the two offenses, they move the ball completely different ways, and I mean, depending on the weather, that could be a factor too, but I'm going to lean towards the more explosive offense, and that's Ohio State at this point.
You made some good points, and I think when healthy, if Donovan Edwards is healthy, I do think this Michigan running game is better than it was last year. I think they're more explosive. I think they can break those big plays, but that's the thing here. Like, Ohio State had a year to prepare for that. They know what Michigan's going to do. Not that they didn't know last year, but they just really hadn't faced it, and then it was kind of...
And their defense is better, I think, than it was last year too.
I do, and I think they're more prepared for this game. They know what Michigan's going to do. Everything is on tape, and defensively too. I mean, Ohio State's offense had trouble with Michigan's defense last year. They have a year on film. Yes, the personnel is a little bit different, but you have a general idea of what Michigan's trying to do. So I think the whole rub and the whole newness to Michigan's scheme and everything else has gone out the window. I think, again, going back to my original point, if Michigan's healthy running game, I think they can win the game. But I do think at some point they're going to have to throw the ball. Like you said, whether they get behind early or they trail at some point in the game, Michigan's going to be forced to throw the ball. And they just haven't shown that they can win a game doing that. Now, they haven't had to, but when push comes to shove, what's going to happen, especially on the road in Columbus? So that's what I'm really curious to see about. I think Corum's had a fantastic year. I mean, he's going to be in the Heisman Trophy conversation here in a couple of weeks. He'll probably get an invite to New York, assuming he can stay healthy and Michigan can, you know, win out here, or at least, you know, win 11 games and keep it close with Ohio State. But we'll see. I think at some point Michigan's going to have to, and even if it's not Ohio State and say they do beat Ohio State on the ground, just like they did last year. You know, once the playoff comes, they're gonna. I mean, I don't think they can line up against a Georgia again and beat them on the ground. You saw that they couldn't do it last year. And there's been no evidence to suggest that this year that they could be able to do it again. I mean, Georgia's just, again, just another powerhouse, big defensive team. So we'll see. I mean,
right. That's the tougher one.
Right. And isn't, I mean, at the end of the day, isn't that the goal? Like, yes, you want to beat Ohio State and get the Big Ten, but you want to get in the playoff and win a national championship.
Absolutely. I mean, Ohio State, you're right. That's the one where you're, you know, Zook's kind of alluding to maybe you have to almost win in a shootout or something close to it because they're going to score. You're not going to hold them down. So you need to be able to put up points. Georgia, it's kind of the opposite. I don't think they're going to hang 40 on a good defense, but they might take away. They might be much better equipped to take away Michigan's run game than any team that they've played so far. And you're right. I'm just, you know, we are not that far removed from, you know, losing seasons. I mean, forget, even if you want to throw out 2020, like before Jim Harbaugh got here, you know, 5-7, 7-6, 8-5 were the three, you know, last years of the Brady Hoke era. And then obviously everyone knows what went on with Rich Rod. Like, I don't know. So to be, these are the two, I don't think there's just like no one listening to this podcast probably that has seen two better Michigan seasons in a row in their life. Mm-hmm. So like, this is an incredible run they're on right now, but it is interesting to see how similar the numbers are, you know, through 10 games to last year's team, despite all the talk about this, you know, new quarterback that was going to kind of bring a different, you know, dimension to this offense. It hasn't exactly panned out. It's been just very, very similar from a numbers perspective and from, you know, as just as far as the results on the field.
I'm glad you mentioned that too, because I going back to Michigan's downfield passing attack, I went this morning and looked at like JJ McCarthy's passing grades on 20 plus yards down the field. And I mean, he's only connected 11 of 32 times for 363 and three touchdowns and an interception. But against Hawaii, he was 4 for 4 for 136 yards and two of those touchdowns. So outside of that, I mean, it shows he has really struggled. I'm like, all right, so what's CJ Stroud at? And I looked at his numbers, and he's been incredibly efficient and good down the field. I mean, 21 of 44 for 772 and eight touchdowns on passes 20 plus yards down the field. So it's like, wow, you know they move the ball differently, and obviously he has more explosive receivers to throw to. But it was just kind of just eye popping to me to see the stark contrast between those between the two quarterbacks, at least in the downfield passing attack this year. Even the attempts the downfield, I know McCarthy didn't start the first game, but man, pretty surprising.
Michigan's really followed a similar, like you guys said, really followed a similar playbook to last year, whether they're leaning on their what they conceive to be their strength, and it is their strength, running the football and dominating up front. And part of me, you know, we kind of discussed this last year as they were progressing as the season went on. You know, maybe we thought, well, what are they holding back? Are they keeping it all for the Ohio State game? Are they, you know, and it just wasn't the case. They leaned on the run game. They relied on the run game. And that's only one game. This year, we've seen them try and take more shots down the field and try and incorporate the passing game more. Early in the year, it worked with some of the screen deals with Roman Wilson and the like. Now, that's since been kind of taken away, and he hasn't been as effective as he was in the non-conference schedule. But Michigan's tried incorporating the passing game. I would argue a little bit more. And it just, like you said, it hasn't worked. Part of that, I think, is on JJ overthrowing guys. Part of that is on the receivers not getting open, not getting separation, and just not catching the ball. So it's been kind of baffling in a way. You'd think at some point they'd be able to hit on it, you know, whether it's in one game or a sequence of plays, and they just haven't been able to do it. And you wonder at this point how much of it is psychological and how much they're thinking about it, because it seems like they're getting asked about it every single day at this point. So it's until it happens, I mean, they're going to continue to get asked about it. But again, going back to, you know, Andrew's original point, as long as you keep winning and you're doing what your strength is and you're having success doing it, I guess the rest of it doesn't really matter.
But I do get what Aaron's saying about, you know, almost like it has become like so routine, it can almost be not entertaining. I mean, the non-conference was, as we've discussed ad nauseum, not good. Although I should point out that Connecticut has won 5 of their last 6. They're now bowl eligible after their upset of Liberty. So maybe that one, we'll see if, you know, the college football playoff, you know, committee chairs mentions that UConn resurgence when he talks about Michigan's non-conference schedule tomorrow night, but I doubt it. But yeah, and then the Big Ten has just been down. I mean, only one game has been decided by single digits for Michigan, and that was that Maryland game that really did anyone think Michigan was at any point during that game actually going to lose it? So they really haven't been tested truly like late in the fourth quarter. You need a drive here. You need to at least get some points. You need a stop here. Like that just hasn't happened yet. And I'm not saying when it does, they won't be prepared, but it's just, it is interesting. And I think, you know, I think this Illinois team will be good to, is like the perfect game before Ohio State, just because of even with their late recent slide, they're still like really good defensively. They still have a good running game if Chase Brown is healthy. Like they can test Michigan in ways that other opponents necessarily haven't. Maybe not since like Iowa, and that was a while back. So yeah, it'd be a good test to kind of maybe force Michigan to try to do some other things to win, but maybe not.
Yeah. We'll get into more later this week, but Illinois is very much kind of a carbon copy of Michigan. They're trying to be like Michigan. They like running the football. They're big and physical. They like to force turnovers and win the defensive side of the ball. So, you know, kudos to Brett Bielema. He's flipped that program in a couple of years. He kind of realizes the West was wide open, and he's kind of brought his brand of football there to Champaign. And they've largely been successful doing it. And as you mentioned, their running back Chase Brown statistically, you know, I believe still has better numbers than Blake Corum. So they like to run the football. They've been effective doing it. So yeah, it'll be a great test. It's kind of like a mirror image of Michigan in a way, leading up to that, the Ohio State game in a couple of weeks.
What is the reason that Michigan's downfield passing attack hasn't been particularly successful? Because the one thing I always point to, this team does not have an NFL wide receiver that I see. I'm not saying that Ronnie Bell or Cornelius Johnson, or I mean, if you want to say you throw in the tight ends, Luke Schoonmaker or Eric Gall, though he's not obviously not on the field this year, like can't eventually play in the NFL, but I don't really see that a guy necessarily getting drafted, and especially in the first, say, you know, 4 or 5 rounds, even that's what's holding it back to me. But it does seem like there are maybe other issues too.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they've had and Brian hit on it earlier, they haven't had a possession receiver kind of emerge. I thought maybe some of us thought that was going to be Cornelius Johnson. He's been wildly inconsistent. Ronnie Bell's been fine, but he hasn't been that true, I guess, number one dominant guy. Maybe some of us expected coming back. I don't know. I almost feel like a Nico Collins type guy would be so perfect in this offense, a guy who can go up and get balls and kind of, just get open. And they just don't have that this year. I don't know if that's on development. I don't know if that's on lack of ability to run routes, if that's just a lack of communication. It's been kind of wild just to see, just because you guys hit on it. Like J.J. McCarthy has very much turned into Cade McNamara, just with a little bit more mobility. And that's just kind of a product of the offense they're trying to run. And I think the inability of the receivers to get open and create separation. So I think it's all encompassing. I don't think it falls on one area. You can criticize receivers. At the same token, JJ's missed some open guys too. And I think that's also a product of the lack of practice for him in the offseason. Remember, he didn't practice in the spring, didn't throw in the spring. It sounds like he got off to a late start in camp throwing the ball. And those reps and that kind of continuity and that communication matters with those receivers. I mean, how many times in the offseason do you hear about, you know, Michigan quarterback, whether it was Cade McNamara or even JJ last year, who would go out and work out with the guys and just throw the football? I mean, that's where those relationships kind of come into play, and that communication matters when you get out on the field and you need to know where a guy is going to be or know his tendencies. They haven't, seems like they don't really know that. I mean, it played out again Saturday in the deep ball of Cornelius Johnson, where he didn't look up for the ball. I mean, it's almost like he wasn't expecting it. So I think it's been an all encompassing thing. It's not one thing. It's multiple things. And until they kind of get it settled or figured out, and they've only got really 2 games to do it, I don't see this passing game really becoming a big part of the offense.
Which is surprising, because their run game has been so effective. You would think that would open up so much in the passing game, and it really hasn't. And when there has been guys open downfield, they haven't been able to connect for whatever reason. So, yeah, like you said, there's none of the receivers have really been – they haven't wowed at all this year, haven't popped as far as their route running or catching ability. Or I mean, you look at – I mean, Marvin Harrison Jr., I mean, look at him and how he's able to get separation and separate from guys and find creases and seams, and just always seems to be open. And you look at Michigan, it's like – who's doing that? There isn't anyone there. I mean, against lesser opponents early in the year, yeah, Roman Wilson kind of blew by the defense secondary a couple times. But since then, I thought Andrell Anthony was going to be more involved in the downfield passing game this year. He only has 7 catches for 80 yards all season. I mean, A.J. Henning's never been a guy that's going to go down the field and catch a ball. He's always been kind of the gimmicky stuff, but like sweeps and jet sweeps and kind of short bubble screens type of player and letting him do all the work. So it's like, yeah, there isn't any. I mean, I think the Nico Collins type is possibly Darius Clemens, but he's a true freshman and hasn't really been given much of a role yet. So maybe down the line or next year, they'll have a guy like that again. But at this point this season, I don't think there's one guy that's going to be on the field that can go do that.
It's interesting. Like the long touchdown passes have been, you know, either wide open or the short passes with a lot of running after the catch. And, you know, why make it harder on yourself if you don't have to? If you can run the ball effectively, you know, do it. If your guy is wide open, you're not going to wait for a defender to catch up with you to make it harder. But the stats on the balls that travel, you know, 20 yards in the air, the stats on, you know, so-called contested catches that I know Pro Football Focus puts out, those kind of numbers are, you know, those 50-50 balls, so to speak, are not good. And, you know, again, they haven't really needed to do that yet, but I think the thought is, right, that against Ohio State and certainly against like playoff teams, you're going to need that. Guys aren't going to be wide open. There's not just going to be green grass all over the place. Like you're going to have to, you're going to have to make some of those tougher plays, and they just haven't shown an ability to do it yet. But I do believe it's there. Like, I don't think JJ McCarthy, like there was just this unwarranted hype around the strength of his arm, the accuracy of his arm. Like I think the pieces are all there. They keep talking about, right, oh, we're doing it. We're doing it on, you know, on the practice field. We just have to bring it to Main Street. And it just hasn't, again, like, it doesn't really matter when all is said and done. We're 10 games in now. Like, you've had a lot of reps. They keep talking they need more reps. You've had a lot, but who knows? Maybe they're trying to speak it into existence. I'm not sure. But again, it was a dominant win, and they moved to 10-0. And we will have more, you know, talk about the Illinois game later this week and Donovan Edwards' health and all that once we talk to Jim Harbaugh later today, who will surely give us a full injury report. We did say we had some other sports to talk about. Michigan men's basketball was in Detroit, Little Caesars Arena against Eastern Michigan. And man, this was an exciting college game. Aaron, I know you were in the house as well. You know, I was sitting courtside and happy to be there to see, for the first time for me, Imani Bates in person. And man, he was the real deal. You know, he and I said it on this podcast last week. It's not just him either. They got this point guard, Noah Farrakhan, that can play. They got some of Imani's pals from, you know, his high school days on this squad. And they could be a problem in the Mid-American Conference, no doubt about it. And they gave Michigan, you know, all the Wolverines could handle in a very entertaining, exciting college game on Friday night.
It was a blast. Imani looked, I mean, I saw him play a little bit in high school, and he's obviously gotten a little bigger and bulked up, but man, he was hitting step back jumpers and going one-on-one and making shots. And he was that playmaking superstar at a high school. So many folks had talked about, and he was the real deal. You know, Eastern came to play. They were competitive. They punched Michigan in the mouth early. They led most of the game. If you correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, they were up for a good chunk. Obviously I think at the end of the day that Michigan seemed a little more disciplined and just more tight-lipped, you know, there in the second half. But, yeah, it was impressive. I do think Eastern will probably have a shot to win the MAC. They looked incredibly. Farrakhan was a good compliment too. Like he was a good, scorer. He got to the basket. You know, and I thought Eastern did a good job of you know, separating them too, and just kind of, you know, keeping one, at least one on the court at all times. And I think Eastern, when they were there, they were certainly competitive and they're in the game.
Yeah, I can guarantee you no one else in the MAC will have a duo like that. That's for sure.
Right. I mean, in the end, like I also tried to say, you know, Hunter Dickinson was kind of the difference, and EMU had guys foul out, you know, late that, you know, they just couldn't match Michigan's size on the interior.
Someone give this guy a clipboard and get him on the sideline.
That's, I mean, we'll see. I'm my previews going forward probably won't be as accurate. I don't think that was some bold prediction that the 7 foot one guy would do well against a bunch of 6'8" guys. But yeah, it was close, just like I kind of expected it to be. But what I love is that this game was 45-42 at half Eastern, which was the final score of the last time these two teams played. So it was a much different kind of game, much more entertaining. And I mean, like I wrote, I mean, I'm not putting Imani Bates in the NBA right now, but like the shots he was hitting were reminiscent of the types of shots you see, made at LCA normally, the home of the Pistons, because this is not many college players Michigan's going to face the rest of the way. You know, 6'9", 6'10", who can handle the ball and create their own shot like that on the outside? No. I mean, he's hitting shots from, you know, darn near the logo at midcourt. So, like, that's, I know there's others that are a little more maybe pessimistic or skeptical about what they've seen from Michigan in these two games. But I think those are maybe two better teams than people realize, two better opponents. And yeah, sure, Michigan has things to work out, but look at a lot of these scores from around the country. Plenty of other ranked teams have gotten some scares. So for Michigan next, it'll be a trip to New York. They'll play in Brooklyn's Barclays Center against Pitt, who already lost by 25 at home to West Virginia. That's the semis on Wednesday night. It's a four-team tournament, the Legends Classic. The finals would be intriguing no matter what, because either it's Frankie Collins and Arizona State or a VCU team that Brandon Johns Jr. starts for, and Zeb Jackson comes off the bench. So kind of a reunion, familiar faces no matter what, and a tournament that Michigan, I'd say, is favored to win. But, you know, the competition kind of steps up in a way in New York. And then I believe the hockey team, they're always in action over the weekend, right? What did they do, Zook?
Yeah, they another split in the Big Ten on Friday night. They kind of rolled to a 5-1 victory over Notre Dame and scored first again on Saturday and went up 2-0 and ended up blowing that 2-0 lead and losing in overtime on the road against the Irish. So even going back to last Saturday too, I mean, they got blown out, shut out 3-0 against Penn State, came back the following night and took a 3-0 lead of their own and then blew a 3-0 lead in the third period. So it's still early. Probably should be a little bit concerned about blowing these leads, but again, the Big Ten's tough. Notre Dame has had Michigan's number for a number of years now. I mean, last year Notre Dame beat them all four regular season meetings, and we know how good of a season Michigan had. So Irish always play Michigan tough, and it's not going to get any easier this weekend for them. I mean, they host Minnesota, who was the top ranked team in the country this past weekend. They split with Penn State. So we'll see by the time this podcast is published, the new national polls will be out. We'll see if Minnesota stays at number one. But regardless, they're the Big Ten preseason favorites. They have just as much NHL talent as Michigan does. So it should be a fun, I can't even say weekend, because it's a Thursday and Friday series this week. So at Yost Ice Arena. So it should be a couple good games.
It's that time of year, folks, where we've got a lot of different high-profile Michigan sports to talk about here on the Wolverine Confidential Podcast. So thank you for listening to this episode. We'll have more coverage on MLive.com/Wolverines. Thanks for listening.